Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, May 18, 2017. Experts, fixing state will take years. Former Governor Edgar tells some GOP lawmakers workers' comp should take a back seat for now. Even if Illinois' two-year-long budget impasse is resolved before the scheduled end of the legislative session on May 31st, Illinoisans are in for years of fiscal pain, a panel of experts on the budget stalemate said Wednesday. We're going to have to raise taxes, which is very unpopular. We're going to have to cut spending, which is very unpopular, former Governor Jim Edgar told an NPR Illinois budget forum. And the third, and this is going to be the toughest thing to solve, is that it's not going to be done overnight. Illinois will have to stay on a fiscal diet for several years to undo the damage, he said. Chris Mooney, director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, said the budget pain could go on for more than 10 years and will require really tough fiscal discipline. U of I President Tim Killeen said it will take multiple years to repair the damage done to the state's financial position. It will be a 10-year dig or a 15-year dig, something like that, he said. Edgar, who was governor from 1991 to 1999, said Illinois is in the worst mess it's ever been in. Even during the Governor Rod Blagojevich years, it wasn't as bad as it is now. He said the state officials need to focus on the budget. The budget is crucial to the economics in the state. We have seen damage done in the last 2 years that has cost jobs and I think has cost much of our economic future. Those thousands of young people who are leaving Illinois to go to higher education in another state probably aren't coming back, he said. That damage alone, from an economic point of view, is reason enough why we need to stop all this fighting and rhetoric once we get a budget. Edgar refrained from predicting that a budget agreement would be reached in the closing days of the spring session, but he praised Senate Vice President John Cullerton and Minority Leader Christine Rodonio, especially Senator Rodonio, because she took a lot of flack from the governor and some of her members. They may not be successful, but I think that's been the most encouraging thing I've seen in Springfield in the last 2 years. Hopefully, we might see that something in the House where the members might get together and say, all right, Speaker and Representative Jim Durkin, who is very close to the governor, we're going to come up with something. We've got to get moving. He urged those in the audience of about 75 people to contact legislators and tell them to approve a budget. Among the audience members were four Republican state representatives, Reggie Phillips of Charleston, Gene Ives of Wheaton, Margot McDermott of Makena, and Tom Morrison of Palatine. Phillips represents some of the same parts of central Illinois that Edgar did in the mid-1970s. The Charleston businessman said he was willing to vote for a politically unpopular tax increase because it's not as important to me that I come back to Springfield as is doing what's best for the entire state of Illinois. But he also said that non-budget items, such as workers' compensation reform, had to be part of budget negotiations. Edgar disagreed. I appreciate your concern about workers' comp, but let me tell you, not having a budget for the last 2 years has done more damage to your hometown and my hometown than anything having to do with workers' comp, said the former governor. Let me just say that you ought to deal with the budget. Edgar said he appreciated the viewpoints of the four GOP lawmakers who traveled from Springfield for the forum, but I just think it's a mistake to hold up the budget. He acknowledged that the state budget was out of whack when Governor Bruce Rauner came in, but it's a lot more out of whack now that we haven't had a budget for 2 years. My suggestion is that you're not going to solve anything here at one time. The most important thing is to solve the budget. Two of the Republican legislators said they came to offer their perspective of the budget stalemate and the state's financial condition. A university town has many public employees who have many strong opinions on things like salaries and benefits, health insurance, pensions, funding, Morrison said. But my response to them is that we've overpromised. I got elected telling people that we are a state having overpromised what we can afford to pay, and now we have to make those corrections that are really hard. McDermott said, it's not like we don't understand what the issue is. It's that we aren't allowed to grapple with the issue. Please, please force them to let us grapple with the issue. The state budget past due forum was sponsored by NPR Illinois and the AARP of Illinois. It is the second of 11 such events in Illinois this year. Ameren, Illinois, continent's most advanced microgrid makes its debut. Ameren, Illinois officials may have chosen the perfect day Wednesday to show off their new $5 million technology application center on the southwest edge of the University of Illinois campus. The sun shone on the center's 430 solar energy panels. The wind propelled its 160-foot-tall wind turbine, and the warm and gusty conditions created an unusually high customer demand for electricity. And everything worked as designed at what was called the most advanced microgrid system in North America. A microgrid is a local energy system that can be separated from the larger energy grid. And Ameren's is way ahead of the others, said Michael Kilpatrick, a vice president with SNC Electric Company, which built the system last year. The Ameren microgrid, which began operations on January 1st, serves 192 customers, including apartments, parts of the U of I Research Park west of First Street, and the U of I Community Credit Union. While the system remains connected to Ameren, Illinois' larger electricity grid, it also is served by a solar array, the wind turbine, a relatively compact energy storage battery, and natural gas generators. And the system is operated by automatic controllers that can connect and disconnect the system to the grid without any loss of power. It is a system that can truly operate on its own, said Warner Baxter, chairman and CEO of Ameren Corp. Tamer Rusin, who last weekend received a master's degree from the U of I and is the supervising engineer of the project, said all of that makes the South Champaign microgrid extraordinary. Typically, microgrids outside of the Champaign-Urbana area are serving just one entity, like a fire station or a hospital or a campus. We're serving all of these customers, Rusin said. The rest of the country is behind Ameren, Kilpatrick said. We've participated in other microgrids across the country with other utilities, but this one is the most forward-leaning with the most renewable resources, and the blankless transition back and forth is what other utilities are not doing. It's really state-of-the-art. Ameren decided to build its own microgrid in Champaign, Baxter said, because of Illinois' constructive energy policies, the utility's relationship with the University of Illinois, and because it already owned the property. To the credit of the state of Illinois, they have been very forward-thinking in their energy policies to support investment in a smarter energy grid. So consequently, we're able to do some of these things in the state of Illinois that we're not able to do in the state of Missouri, said Baxter, who heads a St. Louis-based company that is the parent of Ameren, Illinois and Ameren, Missouri. The things that we learn here are going to help others in our region to really move forward and understand how these technologies will help have a more safe and reliable energy grid for decades and decades, Baxter said. It's too soon to say how or when the widespread microgrids will become more common, he said. But their most likely applications will be at military installations, medical centers, and other locations where an uninterrupted source of power is required. There will be pockets of customers, I don't know how big that will be, who will believe that a microgrid is really the best answer for them, Baxter said. We want to be able to give them the best advice and perhaps install it because we want to leverage the expertise that we have built over decades and decades and decades with technology which is out there and continues to advance so we can give our customers the best product that gives them the best reliability at the most affordable price. At times during Wednesday's demonstration of the system, the wind turbine and solar panels were producing more than 150 kilowatts of the nearly 700 kilowatts that customers within the microgrid were using. Supplementing that were the storage battery and natural gas generators. Most of Ameren's top brass attended Wednesday's demonstration along with local news media. We're extremely happy with this. It's working better than anyone ever anticipated, said Richard Mark, chairman and president of Ameren, Illinois. We've got our entire leadership team from Ameren Corporate up here today. They haven't really seen this yet. And one of our partners warned me that after today, we're probably going to be getting all kinds of calls from others who want to see this. Law enforcement. Suspect in Urbana shooting in custody. A Danville man who has been wanted for shooting at people in a vehicle last month in southeast Urbana has been arrested. A release from the Urbana Police Department said Champaign County Street Crimes Task Force detectives, the U.S. Marshals Service Great Lakes Regional Fugitive Task Force, and Danville Police found Caleb McLean, 20, in the 200 block of Lindenwood in Danville on Tuesday afternoon. He had a handgun when arrested on a Champaign County warrant that had been issued May 5th. McLean had been charged with 4 counts of aggravated discharge of a firearm in connection with the shots fired in the 700 block of South Anderson Street just before 11 p.m. April 8th. Urbana Police Lieutenant Rich Searles said on that night, police found bullet shells and fragments and the rear sight of a handgun. They also found several witnesses and apparent intended targets, although no one was hit. Police determined that McLean's vehicle followed the victim's vehicle from Champaign to Anderson Street, where several occupants in the victim's vehicle got out to approach a house. Police said McLean's vehicle had followed and turned off its headlights. Then someone inside fired several shots before taking off fast. The victim's vehicle was hit by gunfire. As of Wednesday evening, McLean was in the Champaign County Jail on a $500,000 bond issued by Champaign County Judge Brett Olmstead. The investigation into the April 8th shooting is ongoing. Anyone with information is encouraged to call Urbana Police Department at 217-384-2320, or if wishing to remain anonymous, Crime Stoppers at 217-373-TIPS, or 373TIPS.com, or via the free P3 Tips smartphone app. All tips submitted are electronically stripped of any identifying information and processed by a third-party answering service, not law enforcement. Champaign County Court. Jury acquits man of gun possession. Defense said he didn't know it was in the car. A Riverdale man who was speeding in a car with a loaded gun near his thigh was acquitted Wednesday of being an armed habitual criminal. A Champaign County jury apparently accepted Matthew Moreno's defense that he was unaware of the gun was in the car because someone else had rented the vehicle. It took the jury of 9 women and 3 men about 2 hours to return a verdict in favor of the 37-year-old man. Moreno, who had 2 prior drug-related felony convictions that made him eligible to be charged as a Class X felon. Had he been convicted, he faced a mandatory prison term of 6 to 30 years. In a 2-day trial, jurors heard from 3 Rantoul police officers who were working early on May 1, 2015 when they crossed paths with Moreno about 2 a.m. Officer Brad Saltzgaver testified he was in his squad car at the intersection of Grove and Maplewood, keeping an eye out for a suspect in a credit card theft who he thought might be going to the Circle K at 1295 East Grove. Instead, he saw a car headed south on Maplewood doing about 50 to 55 miles per hour in a 30-mile-per-hour zone that pulled into the gas station lot. The driver, later identified as Moreno, went in the station. When he came out, Saltzgaver talked to him, learned his license was revoked, and arrested him. He found a large amount of cash on Moreno, then returned to his squad car to write him a ticket and fill out a tow sheet. Fellow officer Kyle Donovan, who came to assist, confirmed that Saltzgaver found $2,396 on Moreno. Donovan then looked in the car and saw an open bottle of cognac in the cup holder and a pistol jammed between the console and the driver's seat, with the butt of the gun visible. Police later learned that the gun was loaded. In his own defense, Moreno testified that he did not know the gun was there. He said he had been drinking with a friend in Rantoul who had rented the car and that he was going to the gas station to get cigarettes. In closing arguments, Assistant State's Attorney Dan Clifton says it was just not believable that Moreno, who was alone in the car, would not have noticed the gun. Defense Attorney John Maraglia of Chicago argued that it was more plausible that Moreno didn't know the gun was there. He also argued that police had not sent the gun to the crime lab to be examined for fingerprints or DNA. Teen repeat offender held after car chase. He just left juvenile prison 18 days prior. A Champaign teen had been out of prison for possession of a stolen vehicle all of 18 days when he was arrested Tuesday for the same offense after a car chase from Rantoul to rural Ludlow. Champaign County Judge Tom DeFontis ruled it was a matter of immediate and urgent necessity that a 15-year-old boy with several prior convictions be held in detention until a May 24th trial in his case. The state's attorney's office filed two felonies and a misdemeanor against the youth on Wednesday in the wake of his arrest Tuesday afternoon in rural Ludlow. In a brief court hearing, DeFontis read charges to the boy, accusing him of possession of a stolen vehicle, aggravated fleeing or attempting to elude a police officer, and theft. Assistant State's Attorney Matt Bonick told the judge about 1:45 p.m., I ran to a police officer, saw a Ford Taurus in town that had been reported stolen from Champaign. The officer attempted to stop the car, which was first going under the speed limit by about 10 miles per hour, then sped up doing about 90 miles per hour in a 55 mile per hour zone on U.S. 45 north out of Rantoul. The Rantoul officer eventually backed off and other police joined in the pursuit. When the car blew a tire and came to a stop, a girl who was inside got out. The car then kept going and ended up in a farm field in Ludlow with the tire off its rim, Bonick said. Inside the car were a PlayStation, an Amazon tablet, and a purse, all of which belonged to the car owner. Bonick said only the male driver was charged Wednesday. Police reports regarding the two female passengers have yet to be reviewed. They were not held in detention Tuesday. Bonick said the driver had two prior juvenile adjudications for possession of a stolen vehicle from 2015 and 2016, both of which landed him in juvenile prison. Then he had been released April 28th. He also had other adjudications dating to 2013 for aggravated battery, residential burglary, and criminal damage to property. Teen held until trial for knife attack. A Champaign teen accused of stabbing another teen during a fight Monday night is being held in the juvenile detention center until he can be tried. Judge Tom DeFontis arraigned the 15-year-old on a single count of aggravated battery, alleging that he used a knife to stab a 17-year-old boy in the torso. Assistant State's Attorney Matt Bonick told the judge the stabbing occurred about 8:30 p.m. outside an apartment complex in the 2500 block of West Springfield Avenue. The prosecutor said the arrestee allegedly called the victim names. Bonick said the victim sustained serious wounds. He underwent a surgery for damage to a kidney and was expected to have a second surgery, Bonick said. Neither teen lived at the complex where the fight occurred. It was witnessed by several people, Bonick said. DeFontis ordered that the teen be held until a May 24th hearing before Judge Heidi Ladd. Bonick said the team had multiple prior police contacts and adjudications for resisting a peace officer, theft, criminal trespass, battery, aggravated battery, burglary, and contempt. One dead, three injured in U.S. 36 crash. One person is dead and three injured after multiple vehicle crash at 5:21 p.m. Wednesday in Douglas County. Douglas County Coroner Joe Fichter said a semi-trailer and several other vehicles were part of a chain reaction crash on U.S. 36, about 2.5 miles east of Interstate 57. The Tuscola Fire Department was on the scene to extricate people from the vehicles, with traffic control performed by the Tuscola Police Department and Camargo Fire Department Protection District. Those injured in the crash were taken to an area hospital for evaluation and treatment. Victor said their names are being withheld pending notification of the families. The crash is being investigated by the state police, Douglas County Sheriff's Office, and Douglas County Coroner's Office. Police said a total of 13 vehicles were involved in five separate crashes on U.S. 36. Spending more than we have. This is Jim Dye's column. The Springfield sausage-making factory grinds on, laboring mightily and so far producing very little in terms of the political compromise required when power is divided. So far, Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and the Democrat-controlled legislature have failed to work out their differences in the process accentuating their differences. While expressing hope that a bipartisan deal can be worked out in the Senate, Governor Rauner dismissed Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan's latest compromise proposal as a last-minute attempt for House Democrats to derail the senators who seem to be making progress. In response, State Representative Barbara Flynn Curry, one of Madigan's top lieutenants, expressed exaggeration with the governor she characterized as beyond obstinate. I myself am feeling a bit at the end of my rope, she said, contending that House Democrats are trying every avenue that we know to jumpstart the process. So far, Rauner and Madigan have been talking past each other during the budget and legislative reform negotiations that began in early 2015, shortly after Rauner took office. That's why Illinois is just a couple weeks away from failing to pass a permanent spending plan for three straight budget years. Maybe it will get done this time. After all, the consequences of failing to do so are serious. Maybe it won't. Politics often trumps policy in Illinois. There's a third option. Maybe it doesn't matter if our elected officials work out a deal, because once the ink on the agreement is dry, they'll go about their usual practice of spending more than the state collects in tax revenue. Consider a handful of recent news items that explain why this funding spigot is always on. With Illinois effectively bankrupt, the Associated Press reports that the state Senate this week passed legislation that would provide taxpayer matching funds for small contributions to political hopefuls. Spending would be capped at $50 million per election, and participating candidates couldn't accept more than $500 from a single donor, the AP reports. The legislation is backed by Evanston Democrat State Daniel Biss, who is running for his party's gubernatorial nomination on a Spartan budget. Remember now, Illinois is not just broke, it's buried under a mountain of debt. Yet the state Senate voted to create a new program to publicly fund legislative campaigns. Here's another beauty. Governor Rauner and Speaker Madigan are at odds over changes Rauner would like to see in the workers' compensation law. Rauner contends it's impossible. It imposes excessive costs on businesses and discourages investments in Illinois, causing some businesses to leave and others to decline to expand or relocate here. Madigan doesn't agree. Madigan's solution, contained in what he called a compromise package of legislation, is to create a state-operated workers' compensation insurance company to replace private insurers who handle workers' compensation. A state-run insurance agency for workers' compensation? Illinois doesn't have enough on its plate, so it should create another new bureaucracy to go with all of its other bloated democracies? Mon Dieu! It is pretty clear what Illinois really needs. Legislators need to establish some clear rules and abide by them, because the cost of not abiding by them could be ruinous. Sounds pretty good, eh? Well, that's what former Governor Jim Edgar proposed in the early 1990s, according to a recent Eric Zorn column in the Chicago Tribune. Edgar proposed to force the state to tear up our credit cards by proposing a 1% a month interest penalty on the state's overdue bills. He figured no one would be so stupid as to run up huge debts carrying an interest rate of 1% a month, 12% a year. State Comptroller Susana Mendoza announced this week that Illinois' unpaid bill backlog has reached a record high, $14.3 billion. Included in those debts are about $1 billion in interest penalties. It looks like Governor Edgar was wrong when he thought state elected officials would be wary of sky-high interest rates on unpaid bills. Here's another oldie but goodie from Governor Edgar. Anyone remember his famous pension ramp? It was bipartisan legislation passed in 1994 and aimed at eliminating the state's then $15 billion public pension deficit. Edgar called the growing deficit a time bomb in our retirement system that was going to go off in the first part of the 21st century, and said his proposal diffuses that time bomb. The plan passed unanimously called for a 50-year repayment plan through 2045 that required the state to make extra payments to eliminate the pension underfunding. One flaw was that payments were artificially low in the early years and much higher in the later years. Edgar's premise was similar to the one he cited on the interest rate issue. No governor or legislators would be so stupid as to play with fiscal dynamite by not sticking to the plan. Wrong again. Legislators didn't follow the plan, consistently underfunding the state pensions because they wanted to spend the money elsewhere. The latest estimate for public pension underfunding is around $130 billion. The $15 billion figure Edgar described as a time bomb in 1994 is now nuclear. The one consistent theme here is the inability of legislators to come to grips with the fact that tax dollars are not unlimited. If something seems like a good idea, they vote to spend. If a previously agreed to measures limits their ability to spend, they ignore it. So good luck with the so-called grand bargain. If Governor Rauner and legislators actually make a deal, fine. But that's only a start. They still have to abide by it. Telehealth services. House calls back in style. Doctors and patients link via live chat. You can always go to your doctor's office to see about the rash on your arm or your toddler's earache. But there's another choice gaining popularity among patients who want to skip the waiting room and get medical care at home whenever they need it. They're telehealth services, delivering doctor consultations via live chat around the clock. And one of them was launched recently by the Carle Health System. Called Instacare, it's being powered by the Florida-based telecare network MD Live. Using the system requires signing up and access to a computer with a high-speed internet connection. Or patients can download a free app to use with a smartphone. Once patients are signed up, they can call for a consultation any time of the day or night, 365 days a year. And family medicine doctors from the MD Live network will diagnose certain primary care conditions and, if necessary, prescribe medications. Carle spokeswoman Jamie Lang said Instacare has attracted a lot of interest since its April 19th launch. To date, it has picked up 30 registered users, she said. Instacare is limited to Carle patients, Lang said, because the system is connected to their medical records and their MD Live consultation needs to be entered into those records. The $49 cost per consultation fee is an entirely out-of-pocket expense with or without insurance, according to Harry Brockes, Carle's vice president of regional health. That's less than the cost of an emergency room visit copayment for many, he said. And for many without health insurance, it's less expensive than an in-person doctor's office visit. This would actually be cheaper for people who have high deductible health plans or who are uninsured, he said. Brockes said use of services such as these has been growing, and MD Live was one of three Carle considered to power its Instacare service. Online doctor consults aren't new in the area. Carle already offers e-visits to its patients with its own doctors, but generally at a 4 to 6 hour wait because those visits are scheduled around the doctor's other patients, Brockes said. Instacare promises to be a much faster option, he said. You really press a button, and within 15 minutes, you're going to have that provider talking to you in the moment, he said. MD Live was launched in 2009 and now sees an average of 1,200 patients a day, twice as many as it did a year ago, according to a company spokeswoman, Bethany Parker. It has more than 1,800 physicians and therapists in its network across the country. MD Live has been trending the last few years at a 60% growth rate and does not see anything slowing down over the next few years, she said. The company launched virtual behavior health services in 2014, and this past February launched virtual psychiatry services in all 50 states. Carle is still analyzing the use of those other telehealth services, Brockes said. It ruled out its contractual relationship with MD Live with primary care consults only. For now, Instacare visits will handle doctor visits for ailments such as headaches, acne, allergies, coughs, flu, insect bites, nausea, sore throat, vomiting, respiratory problems, diarrhea, fever, pink eye, ear problems, urinary tract infections. There's a potential for more applications in the future, Brockes said. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, May 18th, 2017. Please stay tuned for Part 2.